Armand DeMille.
Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM. Talking about things to help you see life a little differently. Maybe more positively, you know, money. Relationships, they're tough, aren't they? Isn't love a tough thing? Mostly what happens in love that is tough is trying to get that other person to be different. There's a, it may be a Yiddish expression that says after a couple gets married, the woman spends her time trying to get the man to change, and the man spends his time trying to get the woman to stay the same, because she's usually changing and he's usually staying the same. Most of us live with one form of pressure or another. Work pressure, money pressure, time pressure. But one of the hardest pressures to handle is the pressure that comes from your mate, your lover, or your family. I'm sure you know what I mean. The pressure that goes between one person and another. The bottom line of which is, I don't like you the way you are. I want you to change. And if you don't, I won't love you. We've talked about this before in other contexts, but I want to spend a program focusing on this issue and only this issue. We recently did a program called Signs of a Troubled Relationship, where we talked about some of the signs of what creeps up. As a result of this, we talked about contempt. And we talked about criticism and stonewalling and defensiveness. Those are the signs that this kind of happens. But today we're going to talk about pressure. Emotional pressure that one partner puts on another to get them to change. Pressuring people to change. It's often called nagging. But people who do it hate the word. You know, the people who nag hate being called nags. You know the word nag comes from? I imagine. It comes from the sound of the horse. You know the horse, a nag is a horse? Yes. And the horse makes that sound. You know, it sounds like a repeated sound. It's a nagging sound. A sound that preys on your brain. Nagging. I guess because the word nagging has been tied to that word housewife, you know? Nagging housewife, a phrase that men use to dismiss women and their needs. But boy, sometimes men are far greater naggers than women. When a man starts feeling frustrated, especially in his work life, he can nag his children and his mates far worse than most women do. Men, as employers, can nag their employees beyond belief, finding fault with them right and left. So I want to use the word nag, nagging, to have nagged, a nagger, naggerosity, nagicity, nagginess. Stay tuned, you mates, you parents, and prospective mates and parents, because there's a very important lesson about life in here today. Let's start off with a definition about love. I like the one that comes from Robert Heinlein's book, Stranger in a Strange Land, in which an alien visitor tried to learn about human emotion asks the question, what is love? And in giving the answer, And it's given the answer. The answer is, love is the total acceptance of another human being for exactly what they are, with no desire to change them for your own neurotic need. Get that? Big statement. Love is the total acceptance of another human being for exactly what they are, with no desire to change them for your own neurotic need. Everybody quotes the first part, total acceptance. But the real juice is in the second part, with no desire to change them for your own neurotic needs. You see, that's what happens. What happens is you love somebody else and you accept them, but then you want this little change. You may love somebody because they're exciting and vibrant and beautiful and you're, you know, kind of a stoic, staid, more conservative type, and then you get married and you want them to calm down. So you start nagging them about their loose ends. Or you may be somebody who is who feels at loose ends all your life, and you marry somebody who's a three-piece suitor, you know, and you say, because they're conservative and they line up the ducks, and then you begin to criticize them and nag them about the fact that they're so conservative. Little by little, you pick at them, and you pick at them, and you pick at them. Ah, why do you always have to be so stodgy? Oh, why don't you loosen up, or why don't you get control of your life, and these little things start to happen. So let's get on to nagging. It's so simple. If you have someone you love, have someone you care about, and then pressure them into doing things they don't want to do, they will hate you. That's nice and simple, isn't it? Well, they'll at least resent you. Isn't that simple? It's a guaranteed formula. Not children. I mean, children will resent you. That's the nature of having a child. Nature of having a child is they will resent you. The way it works is you have a kid, you have this child, the child wants to do something on their own, like they want to set a fire in their room, and because they feel like setting a fire in their room, and you say you can't set fires in their room, and they have all their friends over, and they have matches, and they say, we want to set fires in our room, but we can't do it, and we resent you, Mommy, for doing this, and one day we'll be able to do whatever we want. And this helps a child grow up and get the impetus to grow up and get out of the house. And that's the way it works. That's how children get the motivation to leave the cushion of your soft, lovely homes. So it works. I mean, it's a kind of a resentment, but, you know, on some level the child leaves and then they love you anyway. But if you have someone who you love and you pressure them into doing something they don't want to do, and they're not your child, they will resent you because you, in a way, make them your child. Did you ever hear somebody nag anybody? It sounds like a parent talking to a child. So when you make somebody into a child, they tend not to like it. They may concede, they may even enjoy the changes they made for a little while, but you live on a kind of a shaky ground. I mean, just for example, you live with someone who is messy, who tends to be slumpy, and you force them, like a parent forces a child, to clean up their room, and you yell at them about their messiness. Don't you think they're going to resent you? Yes, you have needs. But when you start, wouldn't you resent someone who's always on your case about something or other? When you start laying your needs on someone else, they may give in, but then they will resent you. So we've got to figure out another way to do this. And resentment sows the seeds for hatred. Do you have any idea how many people hate their mates a good percentage of the time? There's one very good therapist I know, a couples therapist, who says that couples hate each other about 50% of the time. If you look underneath it, about 50% of the time they hate each other. You want to know one of the biggest reasons for that hatred? It's built-up resentment. And built-up resentment over exactly what we're talking about, the pressure to change. Think about it. Think about it with someone you're close to. It could be a husband, a wife, a lover, a partner, or it could be a friend or a family member. Is anybody nagging you to change? Nagging. Are they trying to get you to change in a way that you don't want to change? Or are you pressuring someone else into changing? What's the idea here? This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. We are going to be taking your calls a little later on this. I'm sure many of you have been involved in this and have something to say about it. What's the idea here? Does the nagger think that if they put enough pressure, the other person will eventually collapse, concede, and the two of you will live happily ever after? Do you think that's the way it works? Do you think if you nag somebody enough, will you put your clothing in the hamper and will you hang up your shoes if you come in the house? Will you wash every dish after you use it? You know, you get enough of it going. And then eventually the person, the idea is if you do it enough, they're eventually going to do it. Is that the idea? I'm going to try to get to the bottom of this, because there's one clear fact here. If you pressure someone into changing their behaviors, you lose. One way or another, you lose. If they change under your pressure, you lose. Maybe I'm wrong, because I've seen one or two relationships that have survived this stuff, but in the long run, they really don't. I do believe that certain couples, especially when it's around addictions, do go and they do make changes. But I'm not talking about addictions where one person is really dysfunctional and the other person wants a change in that dysfunctionality. I'm talking about personal habits where one person just doesn't like what the other person does and they nag them. Talking about pressuring someone into changing the way they are about nagging someone or being nagged. Here's two simple facts to be faced here. One is, if you pressure someone into changing, you lose either by resentment or by their leaving you, right? Eventually, they will say to themselves, I am going to find a place where nobody tells me what to do. That goes on in people's minds. The other simple fact is that if you're in a relationship, you can't have it all your way. That's just not a relationship. There is no relationship where you get everything you want. It just doesn't happen. You got two people. It just doesn't happen. You can't have it all your way. You got to have it your way. He or she has got to have some of it their way. Some of their way is not going to be your way. It's got to be okay. So if you're in a relationship, you can do whatever it is to make yourself happy, but by nature of the fact that the other person has a complete right to be themselves, there are certain frustrations you got to deal with. If you can't deal with them, now you have two choices. Either find out what it is that's making you so having such difficulty with the other person's autonomy. You know, maybe you shouldn't be in a relationship. A lot of people shouldn't. Maybe you're better off alone. What's the idea of having a relationship if you just want everything your way? You know, if you want the bed made just so, and you can't stand it any other way, don't be with anybody else. You know, I wonder if they do those things when you get married, you know, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, for who makes the bed which way, for who cleans the dishes, and for accepting the differences between you. Should be part of that vow. So you got to find out what it is inside you that refuses to let the other person be who they are. I mean, that's the only way you're going to find peace. Or don't get married in the first place. Don't hook up in the first place. Don't try to live with somebody in the first place. Or leave. Clear and simple. Get out of there, because the other way is not going to work. And both you and I know that. If your motivation is to change him. Now, I do make one caveat, one exception. If your partner is involved in an addictive behavior that they don't like themselves. Like if you're married to somebody who is addicted to drugs, alcohol, sex, whatever it is they're addicted to, and they don't like their own behavior, and they would like to change it. You're helping them with that. Doesn't have to be around nagging, but you're reminding them and working with them. That is a different thing. There you could be demanding change, because it might be the only way to get it to work. But if it is not clear pathology, if it's just that their idiosyncrasies irk you, there you got trouble. Let's say you have a wife who goes out to work, and every night after work she gets drunk. hangs out with her friends and comes home every night, parks herself in front of a TV and watches football, and then she falls asleep. What are you supposed to do? Well, by now you have to ask yourself an important question, because life is clearly not happy for you. This wasn't the way you planned it. So this isn't the image of a happy marriage you had in mind. Why does she always got to stop off at the bar, belt down a few, come home, watch the Jet game, fall asleep with the TV on, with a beer in her hand? Why? So what do? Nag her about her drinking every night? You think that's going to work? You know it won't, and it doesn't. There's an important question here, and it's the one I ask when people consult me privately. Is this a behavior pattern that's always been there, or is it one that's involved over the course of the relationship? If it's something that was always there, then you need to evaluate whether or not you can live with this and why you were willing to live with it before but are not willing to tolerate it now. I mean, if when you met her in the first place, she used to do this all the time and you used to hang out with her and watch TV and suddenly it bothers you now, you got to find out why that is. But if it doesn't change, you have to ask yourself, maybe the formula doesn't fit. Are you willing to leave if it doesn't change? It's a good question. Ask yourself the question, are you willing to leave if it doesn't change? There are essential questions if the behavior to which you object is one that has been there from the beginning. Because remember, you chose this person, lock, stock, and barrel. You fell in love with a whole person, not just part of a person. So you chose this person and you said, I take you the way you are and not you the way you're going to be. But let's say instead that this is a behavior that emerged since you've been together. Let's say that it wasn't like this at the beginning, and it's that way now. This is Armand DeMille, by the way, in case you just tuned in. We're talking about nagging and the effect of trying to get somebody by change to change by constantly reminding them about how displeased you are with them. But let's say that person changes now, has changed since you've been together or hooked up. Now you have to take a different approach. You've got to ask three basic questions. How did we get here? Can I learn to accept this? Now am I ready to leave? See? A part of the reason people nag is because they don't want to look at their part of what has evolved. Maybe you'll find, if you think about it, that all started around the time you turned off to her sexually. You know, when you were no longer a romantic lover, maybe she didn't go and stop at the bar and come home and turn on the Jet game every Monday night and drink a beer. You know, as soon as you stopped being romantic, she did. You know, maybe it was you were some part of it. Well, a lot of people, when they don't want to look at their own part, they just start nagging the other person. And when you start taking people for granted, that's another thing that happens. So you start taking people for granted and you start assuming they should be serving you, they should be doing for you, they should be cleaning up for you all the time. They should be. That's another one that starts thing. In other words, if your mate or your child develops some dysfunctional behavior pattern, you are probably some part of it because they're living with you. It takes a bit of soul searching to find the origin, but people who nag don't like to look at themselves. The idea of pointing a finger. Here, try this now. Point a finger somewhere, and you'll see by pointing a finger. Go ahead, point a finger. Point a finger. See? Notice that when you point one finger, there are four fingers pointed back at yourself, or at least three, right? And that's the idea. The idea is whenever you point a finger, there are at least three fingers pointed back at you. You got to look at those three. Nagging is a way of avoiding looking at yourself. And that's my tip for the day, my friends. That's what I'm trying to show you. It's a good thing because if you learn about that and you say to yourself, well, what is it I'm nagging about? Now, here's an interesting thing about nags, naggers, and naggies. All right? The thing you nag about the most is very interesting. We're going to take your calls a little later. And I am going to ask you to think about that which you nag about. The subject that makes you nag somebody you know or care about. It could be your children. Now you're going to say to me, no, you don't nag. You do. You do. Do you nag? You got it? Okay, everybody nags. You nag in some form or other. You can nag anybody, all right? So that's here. I want you to think about that. When we get back later, I'm going to take your calls. I'm going to ask you about your nagging. So it's always good to make the other person wrong, because then you could avoid having to look at yourself. Just make the other person wrong. Point out their behavior, then blame and keep blaming the other person until they either change under the pressure or make believe they change, which is this other thing that happens. Nagging results in the other person taking on a position of having changed. They get to look like they've made changes, and they haven't, of course. You know, it's like eat your liver when you were a kid, when you used to hide it under the mashed potatoes. You know, eat that, eat your food, and you know, you learn to disguise it, you learn to hide it, you learn to feed it to the dog. Or that's what we learned. And when you're away, you know, whenever you're away, this is an interesting thing. If you nag somebody enough, or you keep on somebody's case often enough, when you go away, it's a vacation. I spoke to a woman today who talked about her mother and her father. She said her mother was always there, always reminding them what's proper, what's proper, what's proper. And she remembered when mom went away for 4 days to do something, what a holiday it was. What a holiday it felt like in the house, because they could do what they felt like doing. Do you remember that? Do you remember if one parent or another parent was gone, what it felt like for you when it was like a vacation because your parents weren't around? And they look like they're changing, but only in front of you. I know a man who cheats on his wife. He and she are lean machines, nutritionally conscious, and they basically live a fat-free life. They are very image conscious. He and she have what's considered a decent relationship. But he cheats on his wife. Once a week he goes out and he has a cheeseburger. Yes, that's the way he cheats. Sometimes he tops it off with a scoop of ice cream afterwards. But he doesn't tell her. Why? Because she would get on his case about it. So once a week you'll find him at this restaurant where he sits on his Wednesday afternoon at 4 o'clock and he eats his cheeseburger. And then he doesn't say a word about it. And if he's particularly defiant, he has a scoop of ice cream. One time I met him at this restaurant, and he's sitting there, and he has this scoop of dreadful ice cream. It must have been something like Breyers or something that they served him. And he only had that once a year or something like that. And he tasted it, of course, and to him it was heaven. It was pure sugar, you know, ice sugar going in his mouth. And he said, oh, man, this is the very best restaurant for ice cream in the entire world. They serve the very, very best ice cream. Of course, he hadn't had ice cream for over a year. It was his treat. It was fantastic. It was marvelous. So he cheats. Never tells her about it. One time, I remember I was with him, and he was having an olive from a salad. He was served a salad, and his wife looked at him, and he was about to eat the olive, and she said, you're going to eat that olive? Do you know how much fat is in that olive? She said to him. He got a little irked, and he said, you know what I'm going to do one day? He said, one day I'm going to buy, you're going to discover my body, and I'm going to have an open bottle of olives that I will have consumed. And that will be my way of getting even with you. Well, he was joking, but you know, I think his cheeseburger once a week is his way of getting even. It just gets tough. I know men and women who are closet smokers. They gave up smoking in their households, but they sneak smokes. What's going on? The closet smokers actually do things to make sure the other person doesn't know about it. They chew gum, they brush their teeth, they hide their smokes. What's going on? I know it's inevitable that someone's going to bring up the case of alcoholism and drug abuse. If you don't deal with it as a partner, you feed the system. So here's an important piece of information about substance abuse and abuse. One of the biggest immediate felt benefits of drugs, especially cocaine, is the relief that you feel from responsibility. You see, I used to be the director of a drug rehab program and most frequently observed psychological profile of people who overuse drugs is that they had an overdeveloped sense of responsibility. So people who use drugs feel overly responsible. Very often they would feel responsible for their mothers. You know, very often they would come from a home where their mothers didn't have any money and they would feel responsible for their mothers and their brothers and their sisters, and they may come out of poverty. So they would be using heroin and they would be using cocaine because what it would do is it would take away the sense of responsibility. And you would feel free. Imagine if you felt responsible all the time and then you felt free of responsibility. Okay, so now what happens? Now this person gets in trouble, they get in with the police and they get in some kind of a program. Now they get in a program and somebody nags them about their drug use. How do you think that works? How do you think nagging works on a drug user? You nag them and you tell them about their responsibility. You gotta take care of your mother, you gotta take care of your wife, you gotta take care of your sister. You're going directly into the thing they hate the most. The reason they're doing the drugs is because they feel overly responsible. By nagging them and telling them how responsible they have to be, you're driving them to the drugs. And there were a lot of drug treatment programs that used to open, and what they would do is they would try to engender guilt. They would try to get you to feel guilty. And they bombed. They couldn't do a thing until the 12-step programs came along. And they said, oh, no, not guilt, brother, not guilt. We'll just share the pain of this thing. But it's not. We're not going to fix it out of guilt, not out of responsibility. There are other ways of dealing with the problem. The most effective was always involves the mates or parents seeing the drug problem. Not as the other person's problem, but as everybody's problem. Well, I don't want to focus on drug and alcohol usage. I want to focus our attention on the very act of nagging itself. Okay, friends? And when we get back from our break today, we're going to take a break at 1:30. I want to focus on nagging as you know it. Number one, what is it that you nag people about? What is the most frequent thing that you nag people about? What is the nagger in you like? Let's talk about the nagging you. Remember, nagging is anger. Nagging is disdain. Nagging, and I don't mean it judgmentally, is truly disrespectful. It means I don't want you to be who you are. Nagging is a form of hatred. It really is. So, what we want to do, if we can, is to try to get some control over this so maybe we could find a more effective way of getting the things we want to change to change. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. If you, timing. If you wanted to get a copy of today's show, by the way, in case you couldn't stay with us, you'd call 212-757-4488. We'll be back with you in just a little bit. Michael, we're going to have to come.
Tell me the truth. How do you feel like you're rolling so fast?
Okay, Armand, I'll give you the cue.
Feels, don't feel too bad. Not all alone, all trying to get along.
Hey, this is Bernie Ledden. You're listening to WBAI.
Okay,
start
now. Listener
supported radio in New York City.
I'm going to get a drink of water, and I'll be right back. It'll take me about 60 seconds.
Friends, hot stuff. That's from Germany. I don't think it's available here in New York. Jar Weltwunder Records. MTADDY. More of that a little later. Michael G. We have this new thing here at WBAI. It's very interesting. We have a station break. We now have a mandatory station break at 1:30. And so now as I'm doing my, you're going to watch me do this. Now as I'm doing my conversations, I have to get exactly to 1:30 when I say we're taking a break. And at 1:30, I've got to get off with a smooth kind of transition. Today I missed it by a minute, but Michael G saved me. So if you got confused there for a minute or so, we're learning. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We are talking about nagging. The telephone number here at WBAI is 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. We're talking about your experience of this, making people change. The whole idea of trying to make people change. Most of us live with one form of pressure or another in our life. Work pressure, money pressure, time pressure, family pressure. Any kind of pressure that whatever we work with, it is, it comes up in every direction and, you know, sometimes just to have your mate leaning on your head over and over again, telling you how you have to be different, that's brutal. That's brutal. So you got to put a stop to it. One way or another, you got to find a way to put a stop to it. Because it doesn't work. I mean, it doesn't work. After a while, you either go numb, you go dead on the inside, or you wind up hurting the other person. We don't want that. 212 it is, 209-2900. We're going to take your calls about this today. Michael G., if you're with us, we'd like to... Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Oh, hi. I didn't expect to get in so quickly. It's an interesting topic, I think. The question was about my nagging or other people's nagging at me.
Well, how about both?
Okay. There are two things going on right now. Excuse me. And it's basically in terms of my mother and myself. She nags me all the time about the clutter that I keep, and I know it's something I do. On the other hand, I guess in taking responsibility for myself, I nag her, and it's interesting you use the word nag. She calls it preaching. I call it being concerned. But it is nagging, and I see that I do it. It's about health-related issues.
Yeah, like, so how will you do it? How will you do it? Let's say it's about, Mom, take your pills.
No, nothing like that. She, well, I've become vegetarian, almost vegan, And I think there's a lot of choice in that. And she nags me. I guess it's the mother and love and food. She had always said, I don't know how all these years you're eating the way you are. And she nags me about that. How could you change? How could you stop doing it the way I ate the way my mother ate? You don't eat the way I cooked for you. So I realize it's the mother, love and food symbolism there.
So in other words, your mom puts pressure on you because you've changed.
Yes, but
she doesn't want you to change. She says your changing has hurt me. In other words, by your rejecting my values and the things I grew up with you, in a way you are rejecting what I value with you and what I value with my mother.
And I've actually said that to her. I'm very aware of it, but the most critical thing is she had two gallbladder attacks in the last couple of within the last year, and a lot of it was caused by her eating very high fatty foods, deep fried stuff, all the stuff she likes. She's 84, will not change.
Wait, hold on a second now. You're calling me because you don't like the fact that you're a nigger. Then at the same time, you're telling me what's wrong with your mother.
No, it's about
okay,
me.
So let's,
it's what
yeah,
can
right,
I do?
Right,
okay.
right.
I heard
so
you.
Let's not talk about mom and what's wrong with mom and mom, how mom caused her gallbladder.
No, it's me.
Yeah,
right. My feelings about that, that's what I meant.
But you see, your feelings are not because your mom.
Pardon?
Your feelings are not about your mom's eating her fatty foods.
Well, I don't want her to get sick again, have an emergency, and die. I have to deal with my feelings about that.
That's right.
I can't change her. But I want to stop the nagging about it when she does her behavior in front of me. And I'm sure it happens in other relationships, too, so it's all-encompassing. I don't like that part of myself,
and
my behavior.
You've done this with other people?
I'm sure, in some ways.
I mean, can you think of another relationship where you say to yourself, oh, I wish I could just keep my mouth shut?
Nothing specifically, but I know within that same subject, I feel it coming up, so I'm sure it's happened, and I don't like it when I do it. I don't know what to do with the feelings that crop up.
Do you tend to be a perfectionist, usually, in your life?
In some things, yes. Not everything. I let things go by the wayside, and but when I'm in the middle of a project, whatever, when I'm doing something and focus on, yes, I can.
Well, just stick with me, because I think this might be helpful to people.
Yes?
There are certain people who, when they look at things in the world, they see the flaw a lot more than other people do. Do you tend to be able to see flaws more than most people do?
Give me an example of what you mean, please.
Like if you look at a painted wall, you'll see a part of the wall that's got the smudge, and you'll notice it, and it'll gnaw at you.
It won't gnaw at me. I'll look at the overall thing and say, wow, that looks nice or that doesn't, but I don't think, no, I can look at the smudge and, as an example, and it'll sit there, and then after a while it won't bother me.
It won't bother you, good. Because the people who are perfectionists, you know, it's very hard for them to ever get away from leaving things alone. Because the major issue we have here is you're not wanting to take care of your mom. You're angry at your mother. You're angry at her for getting sick, for being sick, for being somebody you have to take care of.
No, and I thought about that, too.
All right.
I agree with the concept, but
okay, well,
the part I agree with is that by her not caring, and she said it in so many words, I don't care if I die, I don't care, it doesn't matter, you know, I'm a widow now,
does that make you angry at her?
That makes me angry.
That's what I was talking about.
Yes, that part does.
Okay, so what I'm saying is your nagging is a reflection of your anger. That's what this is about. You're mad at her. Now, everybody gets mad at mothers who they have to take care of in one form or another, including mothers who talk about they want to die and they want to go off and they want to do this.
But I'm not taking care of her in the way that some people are caregivers. She's still an independent person.
Yeah, I hear. So you're caught in the middle of this thing, you know, you're caught in the middle of it. Your anger is just so strong, and it's there, and that's what's coming out. I mean, and here's the whole point.
Hmm.
If she's an independent person and you let her be who she is, that means that when she does get to the point where you're going to have to take care of her, you're going to have to take care of her, and you're going to get stuck with that.
Oh, I'm aware of that.
Yeah.
But she throws it at me that how she doesn't have she uses other relatives as examples, like so-and-so is such a good son, so-and-so is such a good daughter, how when they take the parent in and do everything for them.
You are caught in a nagging loop. So there must be a way out of it.
So when she does the same thing to me, nagging me about my clutter, my mess, or whatever it is that upsets her, can I turn it around and say that that's her anger at me for some reason, even though we do not live together?
Sure, but you know you don't have to say it to her. You know what you do with her?
What?
Tickle her. That's what you do. Tickle her.
Well, this is a very...
Well, that's a cure for nagging. I didn't mention that on the air so far.
Oh, now you are.
Tickling your mother is a cure for her nagging you. It only works with mothers. Does not work with mates, but does work with mothers.
And it's interesting because she has said she hates to be tickled.
God bless.
Thinking about that. Well, this is a very interesting topic. I look forward to hearing what other people have to say.
Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, let's take another call. Well, then, Mom, if you keep nagging me, I'm going to tickle you. But I hate to be tickled. Well, then I hate to be nagged. Oh, the menacing tickler. Hi there, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Armand. This is Meredith.
Hello, Meredith.
How are you?
Good.
I am having a very similar problem to the person that just called, but it's with the boyfriend, and I am a terrible nag. I was in a relationship with this person in the past, and we broke up, mainly because I felt like I couldn't stop nagging, and obviously it wasn't working. And now,
so what do you nag him about?
The main things that I nag him about are, I feel, in my opinion, that he sometimes is irresponsible and that he doesn't take the proper care of himself, similar to what the other lady was saying.
He's got a bad gallbladder, too?
Well, right now he's got a spinal cord injury, which he didn't have when we were together before. I don't want it to come to the point where I have to feel like I have to walk away again. And I don't know, I try to keep my mouth shut, and sometimes I just get so frustrated, and I can't keep my mouth shut, and I start, you know, telling him, you gotta do this, you gotta do that, and he just shuts me off, you know, and that makes me more angry, and then I nag more, and I want to, you know, I don't want it to turn out like it
did
before.
Well, let's look for it a minute, Meredith. I mean, if he doesn't take care of himself, right?
Right.
Then what does that mean to you? So what if he doesn't take care of himself? What if he's got a spinal cord injury? And what if he doesn't take care of himself even more? Then what's going to happen to him?
He will have further medical complications.
Okay, and now he's got more. Just stick with me, Meredith. He's got more and more medical complications, and you leave him alone, and then what happens?
You mean if I...
Stop nagging him, or if I leave him?
Let's
say you stopped nagging him, and he just got more and more medical complications. Now what happens next?
Well, for instance, say he had to go in the hospital, obviously.
Yeah,
that would affect my life, because I would be running back and forth to the hospital.
You run back and forth to the hospital, Meredith.
Right.
I mean, who says you have to run back and forth to the hospital?
No, I don't have to, but I guess I would, you know.
Okay, so what we're saying here is that Meredith is a slave to her own fear that if he chooses to hurt himself in some way or chooses to go a path, that you're going to have to serve his path. I mean, you could really say to him, look, honey, you get sick and you go in the hospital, I'm out of here. I'm going to make that real clear with you. You do anything you want. You want to smoke cigarettes, smoke cigarettes. You want to eat fatty foods and get a gallbladder problem, you do it. But if you go into that hospital, I am not going to be a part of it. Now, that's an interesting option, because then you don't have to nag him anymore, and then you're just going to have to follow through. If he gets sick and he goes in the hospital, you're going to have to follow through.
I'd have to follow through and deal with the consequences in my own head and my own heart if I followed through with
that. Well, in a way, you'd be
I don't want it to come to that, you know?
But in a way, you'd be helping him, you know what I mean?
And I did. I feel like, you know, we went through this whole thing once before, and we kind of split up over it, and I feel we split up over it. He feels we split up over other reasons. And when I tell him that, you know, these were part of the reasons, and also I heard myself back then, and I'm like, all you are doing is nagging this man.
Isn't he something?
He's sitting there in the morning having coffee, calm, and, you know, feeding the cats for me, and I'd be like, why are you sitting there? Why are you nagging? And, you know, I don't hear myself, but sometimes I see people look at me like, because they hear me. talking to him like that.
Love will turn you into a monster.
And, yeah, I don't want to be like this anymore, and it's just I lose control.
Yeah, I got it. I got it. So it means at some point Meredith looking at him and saying, I got to let you go. I got to let you go. I got to let you go. And then you let him go.
Let him go as far as telling him what to do.
Yeah, you let him go. And that means you just make it clear with him, you know, if you do get sick, honey, if it does happen to you, I'm not going to be there. And that way I won't nag you anymore. Is that going to be okay with you? If you do wind up in the hospital, I'm not going to be there. But that way I won't nag you anymore.
And then just practice the self-control of keeping my mouth shut.
Just see what it's like. Well, you'll see, you know, if it really do it right, you look at him, and you'll find that your heart melts.
And I forget that because I get so mad that I forget the good things about him, and I learned them all, you know. I thought I learned a lot in between our two relationships, but now I'm finding I'm doing all the same bad things again, all the same patterns.
Love is tough.
And I don't want to be like this.
I hear you.
So.
Okay, Meredith. Thank you.
But thank you very much.
Sure.
Okay. Bye-bye.
212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. You see what I mean? I mean, if you just think about it, friends. These are nice people, huh? Nice people caught in this thing of trying to love another human and be with another human and just be loved back in return. It's so tough. And then this stuff comes up all the time. How little help you can get with it. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Hello there.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Who is this?
This is Avery.
Hello, Avery.
How are you today?
Good. Is your radio still on, Avery?
Yeah, let me turn it off.
Thank you.
Okay, hold on. Is that better?
No, it's got to be off completely.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Yes, well, the reason that I'm listening to you is that my husband calls, and hopefully he's listening, because he called me and asked me to turn your radio on, your show on, so I didn't think I would get in, but I'm calling because I got married about 6 months ago, and I married a very interesting, unconventional man that I adore, but he seems to have real issue with my apartment. We each have our own apartment, and he's constantly getting on my case about my apartment. He says that his spirit can't move and it's too much stuff, and I move some things, and I think that, okay, fine, he's going to come and we're going to be okay, but invariably, whenever we get together, you know, this topic, regardless of where we are, this topic constantly comes up about I have too much stuff in my apartment, and, you know, it's almost like it's a condition of us being together, and it just makes me sad because I care about him, and I think that if he really cared about me, that it doesn't matter what I have in my apartment. It's not that it's unclean or that the things aren't nice, and it just saddens me a lot, and I'm so frustrated that I just don't see how we can, what we can do to get past this.
Yeah, Avery, it sounds like it's, are you using a remote phone, by the way?
No.
Okay.
Oh, you mean
a wireless phone.
No. Okay. I'm on my home phone, on my landline.
Okay, great. Just, if you would, we're just getting a funny signal. Avery, you two just got married.
Yes.
And you live in separate apartments. Why is that?
It's for right now, it's about, you know, not changing everything all at once. It's just, we didn't know each other very long before we got married, and it's been like a process, and it's comfortable. I mean, we're both in our 50s, and right now it's just something that hasn't kind of come together. We're looking for a place that where the both of us could be to get in one place. But for right now, this is something that's okay. I travel a lot, and he's kind of stationary.
Do you sleep together overnight?
Yes, when we're together,
how often are you together?
Well, it just varies. We see each other maybe every other day, or sometimes he'll go. Well, he's been traveling quite a bit, and I've been kind of stationary, which has been a little unusual. So,
So you're about together half the time, and you're married in a very unconventional way.
Right.
And it's kind of unconventional. And then when he comes to your home, he has complaints about your home, saying that it's too cluttered, and he wants to change. He has a discomfort with the way you live.
Right.
Suddenly.
Yes.
He didn't have this discomfort before you got married.
Well, I think he did, but it wasn't something that was, you know, conditioned. Like, well, we can only be together if you get rid of 30% of what you have in your house. I didn't feel as though that it was such an issue, but since we've been married, it seems like it's been sort of really in the forefront of our relationship.
And it does seem to me that there is a discomfort with intimacy here. And it's a discomfort with intimacy in general, even though unconventional is a good word. Unconventional and kind of afraid of being close does fit, because as unconventional as it sounds, it's a little like, you know, well, we don't want to get too close. And somebody here is saying, you know, even though you're saying, yeah, we're 50 and it makes sense, we don't live together, but we don't sleep together half the time. And we're just unconventional, and that's the way it is. It does sound like somebody's not too good at getting close. Mm-hmm. What happens when somebody who's not too... Was he married before?
No.
That's what I thought. So he's kind of a guy who's not used to hooking up. And he's listening right now, right?
Yes, I think he is.
Yeah. So he's not used to being hooked up with somebody, and he's not used to the fact that what you never do is complain to your partner unless it's essential. You know, he's not used to the fact that living with somebody else is really a partnership where you allow the other person to be who they are. But he's not used to it because he's never lived in a space with anybody. He's never been there with anybody. So this is all brand new. So he's trying love, but he's doing it with one foot out the door. You're married, but you're not. You know, he's there half the time, and he's not here half the time. You sleep together, but you don't sleep together. How big is your bed, by the way?
It's a queen-size bed.
Uh-huh. Do you make contact when you sleep?
Yes.
Are you very close when you sleep?
Yes, we are, at least. Yes.
That's nice. Mm-hmm. That's nice, because I would hate to think that you sleep in separate beds as well, just for keeping some kind of a decent thing. So I think it's a problem of intimacy. And I think when you pick on issues like this, it's really a camouflage for the fact that you're both probably scared.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're probably both scared. You've been married before, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I heard that. Mm-hmm. And you didn't have this problem the last time around, did you?
No.
Yeah. So what I suggest is you get with somebody who helps you talk this through, who is non-judgmental. You know, somebody who can help you talk it through. I understand. There's a nice book out there called, well, no, that book actually doesn't apply at all. Forget about the nice book. There's a not-so-nice book out there. But meeting with a decent therapist in the middle who could help you talk about these things might help you check it out a little further, because at the point where nagging comes in, next comes disrespect, and then comes you know, all these other things that start to happen, that just, you know, complaining and stuff, the stonewalling where you turn a dead ear to the person, just not such a good thing.
Yeah. Well, I want more than anything for us just to be together and just enjoy this wonderful opportunity that's been given to us. And I want to do whatever I can to support that. And
well, he's listening right now, so I want you to tell him what you love the most about him right this minute.
I love his laughter. I love...
Say it to him directly.
My darling husband, I love your laughter, and I love the fact that you are such a courageous person and very strong, and I want to do whatever it takes to make our relationship just what we want it to be.
Very nice. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Armand DeMille. So you see, as you're listening, friends, it's really, tain't so easy. Tain't so easy. Just not so easy to make things work. We recently, and I'm sure many of you have heard about this, we did a thing called The Signs of a Troubled Relationship. There are a set of CDs or tapes which address the signs that show you you've got difficulties. If you want a copy of those, or if you want a copy of today's program, you could call my office at 212-757-4488. You could send me an email, armand@brainlink.com. Soon, I am told, we will be getting all of our programs up on the web so that they can be gotten by you for free at any time, any place in the world. Should be within maybe a month or so. Really excited about that. Real happy. It's called Archives. I'm looking forward to being able to do that. So, my friends, and we're still looking for office clerical help in case anybody's still looking out there. 212-757-4488. I'll be back with you on Tuesday at 1 o'clock. Here's some more of this spectacular music from Germany. I think you'll enjoy this. Here we go, my friends. Be with you on Tuesday.